Actually, I have never met him in person. It's a strange thing that whenever I was in England, he was in the West, but he was outside England. When I was abroad, he was back to England, and when I was back to England, he was in America. So we kind of I kept missing him. But so my sort of contact with Ajahn Chah is really through meeting Achin Sumedho, my teacher I met in England 24 years ago. And I think he really definitely embodied the spirit of Ajahn Chah, as you've heard it throughout the day here. I wasn't particularly into any religious path or anything like that, but hearing Lumpo Sumedho give a talk about his experience in Thailand and talking about Lumpo Cha immediately kind of aroused, kind of brought in me a real sense of faith and trust in this whole way of life, even though I had actually no intention of becoming a nun. But he was kind of, there was a whole lifestyle that really spoke to me very deeply. And when I went to London, went back to London and did my first all-night sitting with them, and there was this kind of, I had a feeling that monastic life was something very serious, you know, and you really had to be very strict and disciplined and all that sort of thing. And, you know, my first all-night sitting, I remember in Hampstead, there was this sort of strange beings in the room that were practicing the teaching of Ajahn Chah, and, you know, one of them was wrapped in a blanket all night, sort of coming in and out in the blanket. There was some strange novices, and he was kind of left free to come and go, sort of covered in a blanket. It's called Jonathan. He's a really nice man, but he was just going through a difficult time. And I was kind of, you know, considering myself quite sensible and normal. So, but I also, you know, I like the eccentric aspect of life and the kind of craziness of life. So I thought, this is interesting. I mean, speak to me. So you have people kind of going in and out, was wrapped with a blanket, all night sitting, meditation, sort of. And so I've had really my greatest kind of the sort of most of the contact which I've had with Ajahn Chah is indirect. And through stories, through the many sort of anecdotes that's been shared, you know, through during the last 20 years, there are a few that stick in my mind. And one I remember, which it's probably quite ordinary if you'd been there, but one I remember very well, which was, I thought, in a way, exemplified the humor he had and the kind of teacher I would have liked to have in some ways, you know, I'd like to have this kind of teacher that make you laugh at yourself. And the story was that there was this novice, I think, who was kind of by his kuti, and Ajahn Chah turned up and said, let's call the novice John. I don't know what was his name, but okay, John, can you catch this chicken there? Catch this chicken. And, you know, novice John was kind of a bit surprised, and they said, come on, catch this chicken. And so John obeyed the teacher and start running after the chicken and really run and sort of, come on, get it, you know. And John obeyed and very, you know, dutifully and start running around kind of trying to catch his chicken. And finally he kind of suddenly sort of realized what he was doing, and both of them burst laughing. And I thought that's really one aspect of Ajahn Chah which I would love to have experienced. Be able to laugh at myself in that way would have been quite, you know, quite wonderful. Also, when I was in Thailand 3 years ago, I spent 2.5 years in Thailand, and strangely enough, I was going there to spend time on retreat anywhere. I didn't have any intention to be with Ajahn Chah's disciples or any kind of monastery of Ajahn Chah. I just thought, I'll go wherever I feel it's the right place. And some woman in Bangkok said that she knew a place for me, and she didn't tell me what it was exactly, but it was forest monastery, and it would be the right place. So she took me there, and I discovered that it was a disciple of Ajahn Chah, where I spent 2.5 years. So that was another interesting kind of link, even though I hadn't kind of planned it. Also during my second year in that monastery, there was a nun there who spent a Vasa with me, the summer retreat. And she'd spent 15 years at Wonnombapong, where the nuns live. And she'd been the sort of assistant secretary and attendant of the senior nun when the first woman who ordained was Ajahn Chah. So I got quite a lot of stories from her, including tapes of her teaching that he used to give to the nuns from time to time. And she was telling me how in the early years, the first woman who wanted to come and study was Ajahn Chah. Was a very pretty sort of 18 years old woman, young woman from the village and nearby, and she was she liked to sing, she was performing, and she was very kind of bright and very kind of boisterous and pretty and so on, you know, and she was absolutely determined to study with Ajahn Chah. So Ajahn Chah actually made her wait 2 years and said, you have to keep the 8 precepts for 2 years. And then after 2 years, she kept the 8 precepts dutifully. And then she was accepted by Ajahn Chah to ordain as a Meichi, in this kind of white 8 precept robe nun. And she was telling me how in the early years, Ajahn Chah actually had them going Pindapat with them, which was interesting because nuns never go Pindapat with monks. It's very, never happened to me once when I was at the monastery in Thailand, but technically it's very rare that such a thing happened. And Ajahn Chah, it was just probably just a practical thing that it was just the best way to do it, but it was very unusual. And certainly, you know, he was probably open to a maybe misunderstanding. In fact, he was. He's been criticized, but I think he was quite far, you know, beyond any sort of fear of being misunderstood or criticized. So, and then she was kind of mid-30, this nun also told me a couple of other stories which I thought I'd share with you, which not so often heard, but it's very brief. One was, it's hearsay, and it's come from the senior nun at Wonnombapong, and I would imagine that it's pretty, you know, correct. And she was saying that once Ajahn Chah had the monks gathered in the sala at Wonnombapong, and he said, are there anybody who find having nuns around difficult? And so some people said yes. He said, well, you can go then. And then there was another instance which was really quite interesting also, when there was this woman from a village who used to come and offer the food to the monastery. And she kept coming with just the amount of portion, just for the monks, and never had anything for the nuns. So Ajahn Chah noticed that and wanted to teach her a lesson. And one day he had the woman offer the food and so on, and she didn't bring anything to the nuns. And he said, okay, and they asked the nuns to do the blessing instead of him. Usually it's the monks who, you know. And suddenly the woman realized what she'd done, you know. So he was pretty sharp. And this is something that I found with just reading Lumpuche's teaching or hearing stories. This incredible freedom, inner freedom and inner total kind of liberated heart that just is totally fearless and undaunted by conventions and by any conventions, really. And this is what I've got whenever I read his teaching. It immediately speaks to the heart and brings you to a great sense of profound peace and calm beyond the extremes of the mind, beyond the duality of the mind, beyond the conventional reality. It's quite extraordinary how in such a simple, with such a simple words and kind of simple stories, just the energy of his heart is really almost impregnated his words, even in books, even in faraway country. You feel if you read Lumbo Cha, it's always incredibly kind of alive. You know, it's immediately the teaching comes to life. You know, I was very pleased to be able to say just a few words. And even though I haven't met him, I have a kind of bottomless gratitude for this tradition and for the what it has, how it has helped me on my path, and also to have somebody like Lumpo Sumedho who has also embodied that kind of teaching in himself of the ability to give you the confidence to be totally yourself, for the worse or the better. And I noticed that in the early years, he never shared any stories of Ajahn Chah with us, and I thought that was wonderful. I thought he was kind of totally gone beyond the anecdotes and the personal. But I realized that, like Paul Breiter, he had spent enough time with the teacher to go beyond the inspiration period down to the hell of, desperation, and still probably struggling through the through these dark periods of or memories or whatever. You know, occasionally Ajahn Sumedho will say, well, it wasn't always easy to work with Ajahn Chah, you know, there's all these inspiring kind of stories about him, but one never talks about other moments when it was really incredibly difficult and you hated him and you're and I didn't think you wanted to share all that too personally with us yet. So it's very nice to be able to hear so many different experiences and different kind of understanding and effects his teaching has had on each one of us. But I think the main, perhaps the heart of his teaching is that this ability to bring people together and one extraordinary thing is when he died, there's another memory I have of Ajahn Chah, is that I was at his funeral in Thailand when he was cremated, and just seeing 500,000 people coming together offering food to this 500,000 people for free during 10 days when we all meditated together at sunset, and most beautiful, in front of the most beautiful stupa. And it was just sunset in this incredibly clear sky, and 500,000 people just started chanting, "You're so," and as absolutely, you know, heart-wrenching, really. And Ajahn Chah's humor went, continued right to very last minute, at the peak moment of those 10 days when everybody had meditated intensely with utter devotion, and there was an incredible energy. And 12 o'clock was going to be the cremation time when everything will sort of, the body will be cremated. And so we've all been waiting, doing all-night sitting there in the night, waiting 12 o'clock. Everybody was ready, looking up in front of this beautiful stupa. And then suddenly, the whole thing inside went into flame. And the fire brigade, which had been kind of standing there for 10 days doing nothing, rolling their thumbs, suddenly had to kind of start hosing the whole place, and the monks had to leave, and the whole thing had gone into flame because somehow the box in which the coffin was overheated, and the whole thing, burned. And we were all sweeping and kind of, half of the night was spent kind of cleaning the stupa inside. This magnificent stupa, which had been, gold, painted gold and so on, was beautiful crystal chandelier. Half of them got dark and things got messed up, were kind of really messed up and so on. And it was amazing. It was all these kind of foul men going up and down and trying to kind of stop the fire. And fortunately, the monks who were sitting inside the stupa got out quickly enough. So this was the last kind of joke, cosmic joke of Lumpo Chai, everybody waiting for the great moment, and the fire brigade came in, down by down to earth, let's deal with the nitty-gritty of life, right? So, and the 16 number got the betting house completely bankrupt, because even though Ajahn Chah never gave any numbers, the stupa had 16 poles. It was on the 16th of January, and they all bet 16, and of course everybody won. So this is a funny little story in the end.